Recording is on.
Good evening, Rabbi Yisai. I apologize for the glare in the mismedrash. I'm going to have to do it this way. Okay. Let's begin with a little anecdote. Sorry, I've been told that there's a glare and now I can actually see it, but okay, we're going to have to contend with it. Let's begin with a little anecdote. Two people came with an argument, I don't know if it was a personal dispute. They came to a Rav, and the first person gave his whole rant. And the Rav is listening to him, and he says, finally says, you know, you're right. Okay, then the second person gets his turn. Gives his whole thing. And he's also going on and on, and the Rav is listening to him, and he says, you know what, you're right. The Gabbai is standing there, and he hears the Rav tell the first person you're right. He hears the Rav tell the second person you're right. So he says, 1 minute, they both said opposite things. How could they both be right? So the Rav looks at him and says, you know what? You're also right. Okay. Now, the truth is that this story actually contains a certain chokhmah to it. But I want to take it in a little bit of a different direction. Now let's move over to the parsha. There is a bit of a puzzle in the parsha. Rashi says at the beginning of the parsha, when the Torah tells us about the people who were sent off as the meraglim, Rashi says that they were chashuvim ba'is hasha, they were chashuvim people at the time. And okay, obviously something went wrong along the way. At the end, when the meraglim come back from their mission, it says vayelchu vayavoyu. Rashi says that the Torah links together their going to their coming to tell us that just as they came back with a bad plot in mind, they also went in the first place with a bad plot in mind. There seems to be something of a contradiction here. Did they go with as chashev a people, which would presumably mean with chashev intent? Or did they go in the first place with a bad plan? So the Maharal notes this contradiction. The Maharal gives a cryptic answer. He says, they were chashev a people at the time, but the moment they were chosen by the people to be their shlichim, to go check out Eretz Yisrael, and on the people's part, it was a wrong request. They shouldn't have asked for that. They should have trusted in Hashem. So we know that there's a concept called shluchoi shel adam kamoi. So a person who's serving as a shaliach is considered like an extension of the person sending him. So the Maharal says, since they were sent by Rishoyim, people with the wrong attitude, as soon as they became their shliach, they also became Rishoyim. Because shluchoi shel adam kamoisei, the shliach is like the person himself. Okay, this puts it into a neat formula, but it still seems to leave it as a bit of a mystery in terms of like just human nature, in terms of reality. Yeah, the Maharal comes, he shows us a formula from the Gemara, shluchoi shel adam kamoisei, automatically it makes sense. As soon as they became shlichim, they became bad, just like the mishaleach. But can we give this a little bit more understanding in realistic terms? So I would like to suggest the following. What's one of the biggest compliments you can hear from a person? One of the biggest compliments you could hear from a person is, if you think about this for a minute, you know what? I think you are just like me. I mean, who do we respect most and like most? Ourselves. If I tell somebody, I think you're just like me, I'm paying you a very, very big compliment. What happened here? if we'll talk in practical terms, the Jewish people, segment of the Jewish people at a certain level, however we'll put it exactly, they were worried. They were worried about what's going to be when we come to Eretz Yisrael. Moshe is not concerned. But here's the fine part. And let's remember that when we're talking about the Dor HaMidbar, we're talking about the personalities of those days. We're talking about people who are probably beyond our comprehension. But we need to learn these things at our level in order to be able to come home with lessons. So what basically was going on there? Moshe is saying it's going to be fine. But, okay, Moshe lives in a higher world. Moshe is a very idealistic person. We need normal people who understand us and who think like us to go check it out and give us a perspective. And here's where things became tricky. These people, as Rashi says, were actually chashuva people. They were actually chashuva people. But as soon as they were approached and they were told, with all due respect to Moshe, we need normal people like you to be giving us a perspective. We want to hear what you would have to say, coming from a more normal, from a place that's more like, that we can identify with. Oh, this already inserted a certain pressure. Call it a certain social pressure to
We're back on now.
Everybody hear me now? Yeah, okay. As soon as they were told, Moshe, we're not sure if he really gets it the way we need him to. You we trust, you we know, you're normal people, you get it. You're like us. Now there's already a certain pressure to deliver the goods, to prove that, yeah, they're normal, they get it, they're in touch. And perhaps we can suggest that this is really what the Maharal means. As soon as they became the shlichim of these people, they became like them in the sense that now they felt the pressure, they felt the pressure to deliver the goods to prove that yes, they are normal, they do get it, and yes. We heard? No? I see myself. You hear me? Does everybody hear me? What? Oh, okay. Should I assume that I'm heard? Is that connected? I'm sorry, Rabbi Isai. I just say that in general, if I disappear, I usually know it, so I'd stop speaking then. Okay, let's try to proceed. Can't hear, nor on the phone. Is that? Okay, continue. Okay, so they were faced with this test, the test of what we'll call people pleasing. There was a certain expectation placed on them. An expectation to prove that they were normal. And the pressure was, can they deliver the goods? If they come back and say, no, Moshe Rabbeinu was 100% right. We thought you get it. Maybe you weren't as normal as we thought. And this is where it got very tricky. the nisayon of people pleasing, having, the truth is that this is something relevant for anybody in a social setting. It's certainly true for someone in a leadership position. I can tell you that it's a nisayon for someone serving as a rav. And this, what we may say, was the nisayon that the Meraglim faced, which we'll explain the Maharal beautifully. There's a story told about Rabbi Fall Hamburger. This was the Rav of Hamburg many years ago, a couple of centuries ago. Hamburg was a big, chasheva, prominent city. To become the Rav of Hamburg was a very, very great upgrade in prestige, status, presumably Parnassa as well. When he was elected to become the Rav of Hamburg, and they moved him into Hamburg, they moved him into the city. So he was treated royally. He was treated royally. He was given a very chashuva salary, as is appropriate for the Rav of such a Ir Ve'im B'Yisrael. And they set him up with a house, with all of his different needs, very, very lavishly. And this was done by who? This was done by the Vad of the Kehila, which was, of course, run by the Rosh HaKol, the Parnis, whatever it was. A very influential, wealthy man who was one of the most powerful people in the city. He was Rebbe Fall's patron, the man who facilitated his getting the position, and who was behind setting him up so well. Rebbe Fall came into the town and he was given a grand Kabbalas Panim, a royal reception. And he's ready to begin a very chasheva, illustrious career as the Rav of this great city, the Rav of Hamburg. Okay, the festivities are over. He moves into his new home. He's settling down. I guess he starts unpacking his sfarim. He's ready to sit down and learn. End of an exhausting day. There's a knock on the door. There's a knock on the door. I shouldn't say the end of the day, because this won't leave time, room for the rest of the story. But whatever the case is, there's a knock on the door. Who's at the door? A simple-looking woman is at the door. Are you the new Rav of the town? Yep. The city, not the town. Yes? Well, I have a problem that I need your help with. What's the problem? She was a tenant on one of the many properties that was owned by, guess who? Our friend, the Rosh HaKol, the Parnas, the one who had basically ran the community, ran the Kehila of Hamburg, and also had been the man behind the Rafal's position. And there was some sort of problem that she had. She felt that she was treated unjustly. She had a very hard time getting to him. She's just busy dealing with his representatives. And basically, she wants to summon him to a din Torah. Okay? No chachmas. Rebbe Fall summons the man. Sends his new shamish that had been provided by this man to go summon the man to him. The shamish comes. He's already been in this man's employ for many years, so he knows to speak with due reverence. Says, the Rav would like to see you. So, the Rosh HaKol smiles, of course. Ask the Rav if it can wait till tomorrow. Okay, comes back. The Rav says, no, tell him exactly what's going on. Tell him he's being summoned to a din Torah, and I want him to come now. Goes back, and the shamish is already a little nervous, stuttering. He says, actually, Rafal wants you to come for a din Torah, and he said that you should come now. So, the Rosh HaKol smiles and says, okay, fine, you know, I'll come for a din Torah, but it'll have to wait. That's not going to work now. Goes back to Rebbe Fall. Rebbe Fall says, nothing doing. Tell him I insist that he comes immediately. And now the shamish is already feeling very funny, and the Rosh HaKol is already not thinking that it's so funny. And things are really starting to get a little unpleasant. But Rav Rafal is adamant. You must come, and you must come immediately. And finally, the Rosh HaKol says to the Shamash, he says, I don't like what's going on here. Please just like remind him of where he got his job from and who was behind this position. The Shamash goes back to Rav Rafal, very, very nervous. Rav Rafal says, tell him I don't care about anything. If he does not show up, I will put out a ksav siruv against him just like I would against anybody else. Goes back. The Shamash now is mamish, feeling like jelly. And he, mamish, stammeringly delivers the message. Azoi. The Rosh HaKol says, all right, tell Rav Rafal, okay, he means business, fine. It's going to be business. The Shamash is all nervous, comes back, reports to Rav Rafal, the partner is on his way here, but just be ready. He's not very happy about what's going on. Rav Rafal is waiting calmly. And the lady is waiting on the side. And he's waiting. A few minutes later, the door opens. In walks the Rosh HaKol, accompanied by the rest of the Vad of the Kehillah, and they have in their hands a whiskey and cake, and they say, L'chaim mazel tov, you proved yourself. You are fit to be the Rav of Hamburg. This was what they wanted to see. This was what they wanted to test. A man who, does he have it in him to be able to stand up in the way he did? This was the demand. This was the last criterion that they wanted to see in order to rest assured that they had gotten the rub they needed. The lady was all part of the plot. Now, so here we gave an example of how it's relevant on a grand scale, but you know what? This is so relevant also on the very private scale. We don't have to be community leaders in order for this to be relevant to us. People-pleasing. People-pleasing is something that can be a very big obstacle to Avodas Hashem in many ways. And in fact, the Chovis HaLavavos, in a very blunt way, relates to it as, in his harsh way, he calls it shituf. Shituf means it's a form of Avodah Zarah. When a person worships, the worst kind of Avodah Zarah is when a person doesn't believe that there's Hashem at all. But then, you have the person who believes that there's Hashem, but he's not one, there are others also. That's called shituf. Hashem and others. So, the Chovis HaLavavos says that a people pleaser is guilty of Avodah Zarah b'shituf, meaning he's really worshiping two entities. He's worshiping Hashem, and he's worshiping the people around him. He needs to please them as well. Now, of course, this is not the type of Avodah Zarah that a person would be put to death for. We're talking about a subtle level here, but this is how the Chovis HaLavavos puts it. And this is relevant at all kinds of levels. I want to think of the classic case that the Chafetz Chaim talks about. Imagine that you are sitting in a family setting. Sitting in a family setting. Brothers-in-law and sisters-in-law, all the siblings and siblings-in-law get together. Everyone's sitting around the table. Aunts, uncles, cousins. And the talk starts going in the direction of Lashon Hara. And it's your brother-in-law with the sharp tongue who's doing the talking. And he's looking at you. The Chafetz Chaim says that really there are three levels of halacha here. What you should do is protest. You should speak up and say, this is wrong. These things should not be said. If you can't quite do that, so at least leave, so you're not guilty of hearing Lashon Hara. If even that you can't do, so at least sit there with a displeased expression. But do not show any kind of approval, pleasure, or anything like that, because then you'll mamish be guilty of Shmeas Lashon Hara and of facilitating an Avera. This is going to be tough. You're going to speak up, or even if you just sit there looking at him dumbly, so you know you're going to be the next target of his sharp tongue. But this is something that could be so relevant. We just gave one example, but we all understand how relevant this could be. It's not going to be come back to Rabbanus. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said that the when he's talking about, okay, I'm not going to get into the broader discussion, but he says, what is the difference between a Rav and other professionals? A Rav is another kind of professional. So he says the difference should be that other professionals, if you have a very wealthy man who wants in his clientele, he's going to get preferential treatment. If it's past hours, if he already went to sleep, or whatever it is, if this multimillionaire suddenly needs your services, you're going to be up and running. While if it's the person who is just barely maybe able to make the minimal payments, or whatever it is, only able to pay through the kupa, or whatever, they're not going to get a especially high priority. And maybe you won't necessarily return all his calls. Since we're at with the Rav, the way it should be is the other way around. The especially wealthy, influential person won't merit much attention, might even merit a cool approach. Whereas when there's a poor man with a problem, when there's a shaila of kashrus, the chicken that the poor man just spent his hard-earned pennies buying for Shabbos, now the Rav might stay up 2 hours later sweating it out and trying to find a heter for him. It's going to be the opposite approach. It's also the famous maisa with the Beis Halevi. When the Beis Halevi came to become the Rav in Slutsk, I believe it was. The Beis Halevi was famed for his Rabbanus and Brisk. But before his Rabbanus and Brisk, he was the Rav in Slutsk. In Slutsk, his Rabbanus was done be'oizu b'gvura, and for that reason, it didn't really work out. When he became the Rav there, so the way it worked in the town was that there were different shuls for different professions. I think that was common in Europe, that there was the banker's shul, and there was the merchant's shul, and there was the shoemaker's shul, and there was the fishmonger's shul. Apparently, that was the way it works, that the shuls were divided by professions. When he first became the Rav, so also there was a big reception, there was a grand reception, and there was a certificate or something like that presented to him, which was signed on by the heads of all of the prominent kehilas, the banker's kehila, the merchant's kehila, the doctor's kehila, was signed on by all the prominent Rosh HaKal. And they were all there at the reception. So the Beis Halevi looked at the certificate and he said, one minute, I don't understand. Was my appointment controversial? They said, no, look, you have all the Chashavei Kehilas here are signed. So the Beis Halevi said, but I don't see anybody representing the shoemakers on this list. I don't see anybody from the tailor Kehila on this list. Are they opposed to my minui? So they're kind of like, you know, chuckling. He doesn't exactly get it. He says, no, I'm not willing to be a part of this reception until I see a representative of all the different factions. I need a representative of the shoemaker's shul. I need a representative of the tailor's shul. This was the way he introduced himself to the Kehila in Slutsk. And we're not going to tell him actually many very interesting and juicy anecdotes along these lines until finally, at the end of the day, him and Slutsk just didn't work. And he left Slutsk and basically decided he's finished with Rabbanus until the people of Brisk managed to prevail on him to take the position. And then the rest is history. That became the beginning of the famous Brisk dynasty. Whatever it is, it's all coming back to this point. And I hope we didn't lose the point by stressing it in the context of communal leadership. It's the test of people pleasing. The test of people pleasing. Like we're saying, we're suggesting that this is how the Maharal is learning Pshat in the Nisayan that the Meraglim faced. It was the need to come back and satisfy their congregants, the people who had sent them, rather than come back to them and say, you sent me, you trusted that I would provide you with a good perspective. Well, here's my good perspective. Moshe was exactly right. and there was no reason to doubt him in the first place. Social pressure is a pressure. And it's precisely for that reason that the Chovis Halvavos and other Sfarim say how a person cannot be addicted to society if he wants to be a true Eved Hashem. A person has to have time by himself in order to be able to relate to society as something. It's certainly a need in Avodas Hashem. It's certainly a need in Avodas Hashem. It's certainly something that facilitates our Avodas Hashem. But we have to be able to dip into it, understanding that we're facing challenges. That we're facing challenges that are going to test our loyalty to Avodas Hashem. We step into society as a representative of Hashem, ready to please Him. If it's a question of pleasing Him over pleasing the people around us, Hashem is going to trump. And therefore, we can't live sunken in society. We can't live sunken in society. We have to be part of society. We have to be contributing members of society. We have to know how to gain the benefits that society provides for us. We also have to appreciate the dangers of society, and we cannot be inherently entrenched in society. We have to have the realm of life, the layer of life that's just me and Hashem, so as to be able to approach our social dealings with the understanding that I'm stepping into something now and I have to handle it well. This is not something that controls my life and governs my life and is going to dictate. On the contrary, any performance that I do for Hashem will have to be within the confines of what society allows. This is very relevant in many ways, and we leave it to the maskil, Anovain, to apply it elsewhere. A guten Shabbos.